Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It girls, we the ish girls. I got Jenny and Lindsay in this bitch, girl. Make you move your hips while sipping gin, girl. Make you bounce your tits like it's a jig, girl. Like boom, sip kombucha for your womb. Hannistein squad link up, it's like boom. The girls be giving you vibes. Tune it, chill out, and feel good inside. Like it girls, hey, we the ish
hey
girls.
Girls, welcome back to It Girls Podcast. This is Jenny speaking.
This is Lindsay, what's up?
Girlies, happy new month. Delighted it's March. What a fucking treat it is to get.
Spring has sprung, girlies.
It has, although it's fucking cold here today. But I'm looking forward to, if we get anything like last year's weather, girls will be flying. I'll be absolutely delighted.
Even the bit of bright, the bit of sunshine makes such a difference. So
yeah, it does.
We want you to sign up to our Patreon. If you are looking for extra content and this one little pod just ain't enough, you want more lols, it's kind of more loosey-goosey over there on X-Gals. That's our Patreon. And if you want to support us, so it is a fiver a month or €8 if you want to go to Triple X-Gals. That's where we keep our tea and the more personal shit that's going on in our lives if you're Triple X-Gal. But X-Gals, you get access to over 100 podcasts, the archive of our most juiciest podcasts, and you get access to the Discord where you can chat, make friends. A load of our listeners on X-Gals have made friends and actually made like connections and stuff like that, so that's really cool.
And if you are a fan of our live streams, the two that we have done, we also do monthly live streams over there, and we are currently in the process of like amping them up to the next level. So if you're a fan of like video podcasts, you know, that might be something that you'd be interested in signing up for. So as Lindsay said, Fiverr month, patreon.com/itgirlspodcast, weekly podcasts, you get merch discounts, all the rest. There's so much shit on there, so go sign up, and you'll be getting a sneak peek this week on what actually went down, so do tune into that episode. Speaking of merch discounts, we are having a fucking sale this week, because guess what, happy birthday to It Girls. We've had It Girls 4 years,
which is crazy.
Today, I think the day that this podcast comes out,
yeah,
it'll be 4 years because it's your birthday. Also, happy birthday to Lindsay.
Thanks, girly.
So go send your love to Lindsay. And also, yeah, so if you want 15% off our merch on our Teespring store, go over there, and the code is BDAY15. That's like all of our totes, all of our hoodies, all of those iconic It Girls pieces. Not our Valentine's merch, because that was a little drop that you are all getting right now, which is great, but our Still Sexy hoodies, our Wet and Woke hoodies, all the iconic pieces.
Yeah,
15% off. We'll give you a little chunk of money, and it's just to celebrate with It Girls love. 4 years, we are in this a long time.
Oh, yes we are, 4 years. And this past year has been particularly great, as we know.
Yes.
But this week we have a really good episode that we're really looking forward to you guys listening to. Mm-hmm. So there's the Two Into You campaign from Women's Aid, which they reached out to us. Sarah Benson is the CEO, so we've done an interview with her that's coming up, but also we spoke to Juliana Scheel, and she spoke about her experience with domestic abuse in a kind of pretty young relationship, which is really common, we're learning from the Two Into You campaign. So
yeah,
she spoke, we had two little Zoom meetings, and it was really, really beneficial, and I hope it's going to really be good for you girls to listen to.
Super interesting. You guys might have heard like the Women's Aid ads that have been on our podcast for the last month. This campaign is really close to our heart. It's really interesting, and I think anyone can learn from it, because it not only and this interview also does that, it not only helps people who could be experiencing it, but also we really wanted to like give people tools if they think their friends might be, because it's something like 1 in 5 women go through this, especially at a young age between 18 and 25, but it can be any age, any gender, like whatever.
Obviously, and any level of kind of you know abuse,
and any level of relationship. You don't have to be in a relationship 10 years to be going through this, as we learned. You know, it can be 3 months months, and these signs can show. So we wanted to make sure to not only be able to help victims or people who might have experienced this in their past or in their present, but also, like, if you are a friend of someone who you might be a bit concerned about their friendship, it's just tools that you can always use, because as we said, this can happen at any point in anyone's life. So we're going to play the two interviews back to back. First, as Lindsay said, we have Juliana Scheel. Go on her Instagram, we'll share her IGTV, so you can kind of get like a bit more info on her and follow her. Obviously, she's gorge.
Yes,
and then we have our interview with Sarah Benson, who again is the CEO of Women's Aid. And thank you so much to Women's Aid, who reached out to us and helped us put this episode together, because I think it's really important.
Okay, so with us we have Juliana, and we were put in contact with you through Women's Aid, who you have been kind of working alongside on your Instagram. You put out this amazing video speaking about your experience. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me.
No problem.
Thanks,
we're happy
so much
to have
for
you
coming on. So coming up, we have a really good interview with the CEO of Women's Aid. But before, we wanted to get you on to speak a little bit about your experience, if you want to kind of dip into your story and how you got in kind of involved with Women's Aid and why you reached out to them.
Yeah, so long story short, I was with him when I was 19. So I was in first year of college. I met him through friends. So like, he was like this like larger than life guy. Everyone kind of knew who he was. Like, he wasn't some like seedy guy. Like, he was really, really charismatic on a scholarship. Like, he seemed amazing, like perfect. When I met him, like, I couldn't believe it. So for the first 6 months, it was like amazing. And then after 6 months, I'd say he just got this really, really bad temper, and it kind of crept on slowly. So like, it wasn't like one day I was like, oh my God, like, what the hell, like, it was so slow. And I think I'd say the first physical incident was about 7 months, and after, I wasn't that surprised. Like, I wasn't like taken aback because his temper had been so bad. So it was kind of just like one notch above what had been happening. And then I'd say that went on for like a year and a half until we broke up. So I broke up with him. I had to break up with him over text, because I tried to break up with him like 7 times, I think, before I actually like got out of it. And he'd always come up with excuses, and he'd be like crying. And I'd feel bad for him, almost like breaking up with him. And then he'd do all this crazy shit, like pretend he'd like threaten suicide and all this stuff to like kind of keep me in the relationship. So in the very end, it was the first time I had like space away from him. I was away with my family, and I broke up with him over text and blocked him on everything. I came back from the holiday to an empty house, and he was like sitting on my doorstep. And then I like pushed past him. I was like, no, like, fuck off, like, we're broken up.
And where was and this I in went Dublin or away?
This is in my home house, like my family home.
Okay. And did you ever live with him or anything?
No, I never lived with him. He lived like down the road from me. So he let himself in with my spare key, like he knew where the spare key was and all this stuff. So we were broken up for, I'd say, about 2 weeks, and he started like messaging me. And I thought he was blocked, and I kept on blocking him. And then I realized that he was logged into my Facebook. And I was obviously like going out with the girls, like getting the people and stuff. And he could see everyone that I was getting with. And he was like emailing me and texting me on Facebook, being like, oh, if you're going here tonight, like, I'm going to be there. And like, he was basically stalking me for 2 weeks. And I ended up getting him off all my social media, but I have no idea how long he was logged into those for. So he was like watching everything I was doing. And so I basically stopped leaving the house, like, I say a month after the relationship, because I was like, he's just going to be everywhere I go. So I ended up, anyway, I broke away from him, and we were friends for quite a while after we broke up. But then I'd say I rang Women's Aid like 6 months after we broke up, because I was just like so depressed and anxious all the time. And I didn't even realize it was because of this stuff that I'd gone through. But I just kind of like on a whim one day, I just rang Women's Aid, and I was like, I just explained my situation. And the woman on the phone was like, oh my God, that's like a completely abusive relationship. Like, she was like almost surprised that I was even asking. And then the more I started saying it loud, I was like in my own head, like, holy shit, like, that's actually so bad. Because I just never said it out loud before.
And so, that
so when I ran with them, they were like, yeah.
If we want to go back to the start of the abuse, so you said for 6 months. So even like, because sometimes hindsight is, like we always say it here, hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So looking back at the first 6 months, do you think there was anything that you could maybe like, you know, didn't pick up on, like when we had the conversation, you know, because of this, whole campaign that they're doing, the Two Into You campaign, you know, things that you kind of could have perceived maybe, especially because you were young and like not maybe as experienced. I was in that situation myself where like things that I perceived to be like quite romantic and like these big declarations of love or kind of like wanting to spend so much time with you. Is there things that maybe you missed from the start?
Yeah, like I think he was really jealous, but I think I was so young that when I saw like flickers of jealousy, I just thought that he really liked me. So I almost kind of enjoyed the little bit of jealousy, and then it just built like up and up and up. And that's when it got really bad. And it was just such a slow like climb that I didn't even notice how bad it had gotten.
And what
I wasn't allowed to have any friends at all.
What would happen with his, you said that after 6 months, he started, that's when like he kind of had a bad temper. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, he kind of, he like, I think there was just an explosion, like at that 6 month mark, like the fight that I'm talking about, like it was just like, it wasn't like, oh, he was so angry. It was like watching a child like throw a tantrum, like in like on the side of the road, like school, like I've never seen anyone my age do that. Like it was ridiculous. And I was just like so shocked when it happened. I was like, what the fuck? Like it was, it wasn't like, I think we went back to his house and he lived with his brother, and his like his brother kind of knew. It was just like this weird situation, but I think it was because, yeah, it was a build up that I just didn't really notice how bad it was, you know?
Yeah, I think that's something that is really common as well with people who have abusive traits or who are going to go down the, like, just like someone who is wired that way. It's like this like inability to control their emotions, and then as the the victim of it, what happens is like you get completely, you're completely used to this, like, unnatural way of expressing emotions and anger that like they can chip away. You're just like completely like used to it. You expect it from them. You've got low expectations. So then when it does get to the point of like physical or emotional or sexual abuse, that you're, it doesn't seem as weird, you know, that way, because you're like, that's just how they
are. If I saw one of my girlfriend's boyfriends doing that, I would be like, oh my God, he's insane. Like, oh my God. But because it was a buildup, I just didn't notice it for myself.
Yeah. So you said you were with him for, what was it, like a year and a half?
2 years.
2 years. And you also mentioned that he did something which is really common in abusers as well. He isolated you. So did you kind of notice like was he being controlling around your friends? Were there other levels of like that kind of control brought in?
Yeah, like I think by the end of the relationship, like all my friends were his friend group. So they were the only friends that I kind of had by the end of it. But he, like my friends from school are all girls. And he just hated them. And he kind of chipped away in my head, being like, oh, like, they don't even like you. Like, they're not your friends. Like, they're all sluts. Like, blah, 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 blah. Trying to turn me against them. And that's, it kind of just drove a wedge in between me and any support that I had that wasn't him, you know, or his friends. Because obviously his friends would probably be on his side if there was ever, you know, fights or anything. So it was always someone backing him up.
Yeah, and it's something that's really common as well that we're kind of learning from this, is that they'll, and it's actually a very like, you know, like manipulatively intelligent way, because it's like not saying that you've no friends, it's like your new friends are my friends, so you do have friends. Can't say that, like it's like a way of gaslighting you to be like, what do you mean you don't have friends, you've loads of friends, but like
exactly.
So say with these outbursts, because I think what happens sometimes, like you were saying initially, you kind of enjoy the little jealousy traits, and like sometimes that can give you like, you know, you can feel like, okay, this is like tangible evidence that he's into me, you know, especially when in younger relationships. And as we know now from this campaign, that it's so common in really young relationships. And like when I got into my first relationship, which did happen to be abusive as well, I felt so like, I thought that was more for older relationships. Even when I was in it, it just felt so odd. But what
that
But you said that like you would have these outbursts, and would you notice that like it would be like, maybe, you know, initially, like I was saying, the jealousy could have been something that you liked, but then it can get a bit tiresome. And if he was reacting in certain ways, would you try and change behavior or stop yourself doing certain things to like stop,
like almost micromanage his outbursts?
To try and like, okay, because that's kind of my experience. I would
think after he had like a big episode, he would get really upset with himself. And we were trying to get him to go to anger management and therapy. And we kind of saw it as like our relationship problem. Like it was something that we were going to fix and get over. Like if someone had told me, like, he's not going to stop doing that the first time it happened, I would have just been like, okay, bye. But because I believed he would be getting better and he would get over it, you know, that's why I kept trying.
I think that's so interesting. I listened to your interview with Louise McSharry, where you made that point, and it was so very like one of my situations. Unfortunately, Lindsay and I have both been in those situations when we were younger, and just shows you how common it is. Mm-hmm. And everyone, that was, yeah, that was very similar. It was like, you know, that just struck such a chord to me that you said, like, his temper and his abuse, like, let's call it what it is, became both of your problem. It was like,
yeah, it was the relationship problem. Like, you kind of think that, oh, if he was another girl, he wouldn't act like that.
Yeah,
and that's what I thought about
it. There would be blame, and your actions were making him be like that. So would he apologize for those?
Yeah.
What would the come down of those big outbursts be?
Like, at the end of the fight, he'd be like crying, like so upset. He's like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. So I would end up having to comfort him, like, after these fights. So he wouldn't say sorry, and he wouldn't acknowledge it. And he'd be so upset that I just be like, okay, I should forget the whole thing, so that he stopped being upset about what he just did. So, like, I never got apologies. And I felt like when it was good, I didn't want to bring it up again, because if I brought it up again, it would turn into the same thing. It would turn into another fight. So I just kept quiet and just never brought it up when we were having fun, like, you know.
So were you, I know you said that you felt like quite isolated from your friends, but did you also, with like your peers, or maybe you were like kind of like surface level friends, some of your girlfriends, I'm not too sure, but like, was there an attempt of you to kind of like hide it? You know, were you in that micromanagement mode as well of like, I don't want anyone to find out?
They would have like zero idea. Like, no one had. He was kind of like an aggressive guy. He would kind of fight with guys when we were like 18 in nightclubs, but he would never, like, no one would ever think he was doing anything like that. Like, I tried my best to hide what I thought was our relationship problems from my parents and all my friends. Like, when I told people after we broke up, people were like, oh my God, like, no one could believe it. My mom was just like mind blown. Like,
what was the reaction like when, like, how did you go kind of public about it? Because that feeling of release, I'd say you got, but what was the reaction like?
So when I went to the guards, and that's the first time I told my mom, and I typed in Word documents and had like pictures of bruises around my neck from being strangled. And I didn't even let my mom read it, because I just couldn't. Like, I just couldn't. I didn't want her to look at it. And I don't think I ever let her read it, or my dad, because you do carry like a bit of shame for letting yourself be treated that way. And so when I think you have to say
that to yourself, and still in like healing, definitely. You have to say like, you didn't let that happen to you. It was done to you. It was done to you. And there was letting. You know, like, of course, like you said, if you knew the first time you showed these things that, like, that was going to be it's continuous, you wouldn't have continued. Yeah. But, like, I mean, and women are, like, you know, nurturers and healers. And, like, you know, sometimes when we're presented with these, like, damaged, abusive men, we want to fix them. And, like you said, it's your problem, and I'll help you get the help. So you didn't let it happen to you, you know?
No, yeah, but I totally understand.
No, I mean, like, I would have thought that after the relationship, and I think most people do. That's why they don't want to share it, like, because you do carry a shame. But, like, no one should, and I definitely don't know. Like, now I would tell anyone. So I started telling people, like, obviously my friends, and then I started going out with kind of friends with him. And I was like, you need to tell your friends. And then it started spreading kind of slowly. But I think a couple of weeks ago, someone DM'd me that I kind of know that's friends with him. And he was like, hey, I heard what happened. He told us when he was confronted that when you guys used to have sex, he'd just get too rough. So he was obviously like retaliating what was being said about him by people. So he had a story, because most people would just deny it to the ground. But he was telling people that. So he was making me look like I was like overreacting and kind of like making everyone hate him.
But he's also, you know, like, still in some ways trying to continue the abuse by disclosing, you know, a sexual privacy, you know. That's like, in some ways a revenge porn thing, but with words.
And it's complete, I mean, like, you know, out and out gaslighting, in the sense that it's like minimizing your experience, trying to like bring in this air of consent into it, like, no, we're having sex, I'm just too much of a legend that I ride. It's like,
literally,
you know, that way. And then, as you said, also has that top of the thing where it's this lad banter and like the lads know stories about that way. So I guess when you're saying like you're obviously hiding it from your closest friends, so I guess that was one of the reasons why you went to Women's Aid, because it was like this neutral voice. Or was it like, did you get to a point where you were just like, I am going to have to leave this, you know?
Yeah, like, I think I just, when I told people, they were just kind of like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Because like, what else can you say if you don't understand? Like, I think it's really hard to like give good advice. So Women's Aid, they're really like, obviously they're all trained, and I think a lot of the volunteers in there are actually like victims themselves. So they just know what to say, and it's very like serious. Like, they take you so seriously, and it's not like a scale of abuse, like, oh, well, it wasn't as bad as, like, I never got any broken bones, but there was none of like, oh, how bad was it? You know, because when you talk to people, they're curious and they want to understand. And if I say this, they might not take it as seriously or think it's as bad as it could have been. But with Women's Aid, they're really just like, abuse is abuse, you know, and that they're really serious about that. So it's very, like, it's really good validation if you're a victim for someone to talk to you like that.
Yeah, yeah, like very matter of fact and not looking for like gory details or like trauma porn kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then, like, obviously, you know, when you started, did you use Women's Aid like multiple times? Like, was it a kind of sounding board for you to help you leave?
Just twice. So the first time they were like, that is abuse. And the second time they were like telling me what to go to the guards with and to get therapy and stuff. So that was like the beginning. But they do offer like ongoing counselling. I didn't know this at the time, but they offer ongoing counselling and they attend court with women to support them when they're fighting charges.
They're so, such a great organisation. But what happened when you went to the guards? How did that pan out? Because I think there's a big fear with that. It's kind of...
I had a bad experience and I don't want to like hang the guards out to dry here, but I went in, stood up, they called me over. I had the Word documents I just mentioned in my hand. And the man was like, he was like a young guy and he was like afraid. So I was crying hysterically. It wasn't just like little tears. I was like aggressively crying. And he was like, oh, like we'll ring. The second guy was a man. The first guard was a woman. And she was like, do you have like doctor's certs from A&E? Like any broken bones? Do you have any like visible bruises on your face? And I had the bruised picture, but she was like, you know, you don't really have the evidence that would hold up in court. So if you went to court, you probably lose and you're just going to have to like relive this trauma. So she said, like, I honestly don't think it's worth it. I'll take your statement, but for you, and she was trying to help me, but she was like, for you, I just don't think it's worth it. And I was so like put off. Like I was like, oh my God, it was so hard to go there in the first place.
Yeah.
For then someone to say like, oh, well, it's probably not worth it. Like you're probably going to lose. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went back 6 months later and I was like, no, I have to do this. And the same thing happened again with a different guard. And he was just like, oh, like, we'll call you. And they just never did. So I was like, oh, I'm not going back again.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember my husband, I was married to him. He was my abuser. And there was a time when he, like, and again, you're saying things like the guard would bring up about like the placement of the bruises. And that was a big thing with like, my, you know, he would, like he'd kind of push me around and you hear like the like hit wife or like did he hit you or did he punch you, but like he would kind of push me or like be like physical to my body, not exactly my face. But one time it was, I was got bad and it was scary and I did actually just call the police. I was like, fuck this. So I rang the guards and they came and like because we were married they weren't able to take him out of the house. There's all these fucking weird rules that you don't know of. And then yeah, so then they were like, we'll put it on file, and they were writing in their little notebook and saying that it was going to be filed. So I at least thought that would be something that was like on file, that I, you know, been in a situation. And then whenever I actually did, you know, manage to break up with him and he was out of the house and I got to that, but I needed to go on, go to the welfare and get like rent support. And I went down to the social welfare woman in my village and was like, look, I was married and we're separated. And she was like, well, why didn't you try harder on the marriage? And I was like, well, there was domestic abuse. And she was like, well, is there any proof of that? I went to the guards and I asked them if they had any if they had that file from that report, and of course they didn't. So those kind of things. And again, I get what you mean. You don't like, you know, fuck the guards, but also fuck's sake, where is the help? So the help, I think, is you know, being able to just like talk about it openly, use you know, Women's Aid, etc., and just not be silenced. And not, unfortunately, it is sick that we can't sometimes get the validation from like the law.
And
that's wrong. But
like, I think me putting my video out has given, there's definitely been like social repercussions for him, because everyone knows now, even though I didn't say his name, like people, like they can put two and two together. So like people are gonna isolate him, and that's the next best thing that I could have got, like if I can't press charges and get like him what's it called when you press charges and someone has a criminal conviction.
And also I think for sure, and I think like the a huge power in that as well is hopefully at some point like he will reckon with what he did. I don't know, like hopefully that will come to him at some point where he's like having to actually face those demons. And also hopefully you know, protect anyone who might be involved with him in the future, you know, because I think that that's something that for, I remember, and for my first boyfriend, I was really I took on that guilt as well, where I was like, if I ever heard he had a new girlfriend, I was like, should I tell her? You know, and it's like, I'm then like protecting, because you do have that feeling where you're like, oh my God, like, am I doing damage by keeping this secret? Like, am I putting someone else in danger? You know, but I guess you just have to realize that, like, it's a journey, and you can only do as much self-preservation as you can. And I think that your video was so good, Juliana. Like, I think you spoke so clearly. Everyone should go check it out. We'll tag you in our episode description because it was just such a powerful video. And, you know, you spoke really matter-of-factly. And I think that women like you talking about these situations in no matter what way you want to talk about it, but like, it breaks that stigma of like the beaten, cowering girlfriend or wife. And it just shows that it literally can happen anyone, you know, that way.
Anyone. Yeah.
We can see
definitely.
It.
Like when I was in school, like I'm definitely not someone that would like back down from a fight. Like I'm definitely a scrappy bitch. Like I'm not someone that like that lets people push me over. So like when I look back at myself, even I'm surprised. Like I can't even believe that I let myself. Yeah. It can literally happen to anyone, man, woman. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Like it actually. Anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
We saw recently in the media with two people, obviously the Marilyn Manson allegations are coming out, and Evan Rachel Wood, I think it was 3 years ago when she first started talking about the abuse. This is what I mean in terms of journey. She first, you know, spoke about it, but then it only, I think it was 2 weeks ago, did she actually name him as an abuser. So these can all be like transitions and like, you know, you're growing. But also another one, which I'm sure you watched, was the FKA Twigs interview with...
oh my God, yeah.
So good.
So crazy.
With what's her name? Oprah Winfrey's friend.
Oh yeah, what is her name? I can't remember the name of the interview, but it was so
she
powerful.
Asked she asked that question, like, why did you stay? Yeah. And FKA Twigs made the point of being like, I'm not from now on going to answer that question because it is so tiresome. And what you were speaking earlier about, like saying that you didn't want your mum to read it, because sometimes you're even like, your mum can say things like, well, why did you tell me what? And like, you feel more guilt and more kind of pressure from like how you handled something that is now in the past that you can't go back and redo. So it's kind of like, do you want to be subject to that?
Like people that are in my parents' age group that not react the worst, but they understand it the least. Like they just don't get it. I think my mum told me a story when she was young that a priest said that, oh, if you ever marry a man, and they beat you, just hit him with the frying pan when he's asleep and he'll never hit you again. Like, instead of like, get out of the relationship, like, because you're stuck in it, like, you can't get divorced. So I think the like non-divorce thing in Ireland is just so instilled in women that when women hear that from me, they're kind of like, oh, well, like, that's kind of normal. Like, it's so normalized.
For that generation, it was normal. And it was like, the first and foremost was to savor the relationship that came, that trumped everything. So to savor the marriage and to protect the family and the marriage, and just to figure it out was kind of ranked higher than getting yourself out of a difficult situation.
Yeah, because then it was like seen as like you giving up on something when it's like, you know, you're like leaving to like possibly save your life. Like you said that.
And it was also just against the church, like to get a divorce. So if you're stuck with someone abusive, like, well, that's
what can
it, you know?
Do? Yeah, totally.
So tell us about, you again mentioned, which was an emotional part of your video, about how it got to the point where you kind of obviously were, I'm guessing your self-esteem was so low that you thought that this was maybe the man that you're just going to end up with and have to deal with. And he could actually be the man to murder you, you said. Like that you felt
I literally, I remember thinking that, like, I thought we were going to get married, like when we were happy and having like the hard times. I always thought we were just going to end up together because I was so like under his power. I couldn't see any light ever. So I thought like, oh, like, is this going to get so bad? Because I think when you marry someone, obviously I've never been married, but it seems to be the case. Anything bad in someone is going to get worse. So any abuse at the start, little bit, it's going to get worse and worse and worse. So I was like, is this going to get so bad that this is how I'm going to die? And I remember thinking like, if I have kids with this man, like, is he going to abuse my kids? Like, how am I going to protect my kids? Like, that was like my worry. And that was, I think that was the darkest thing that I thought. But I think that was only like a year in and I still stayed after that.
Yeah.
Like I just kind of was like, well, that's it, you know, I'm staying.
Yeah. And I think that just shows like the power that manipulative and abusive people can have over anyone's mind. And that, like, you know, if there's something that anyone takes away from this whole episode is just like realizing, you know, like that thing that FKA Twigs said, like, it's not about like, you're like, ah, sure, it's grand, sure, I'll stay. It's like, these are like things that are, this is like brainwashing that, like, you know, I'm not saying there's not like no definitive timeline of how long this can take. This can happen. Some people are such powerful manipulators. They can manipulate someone in 6 weeks, 2, 8 weeks. It can be a year in, yeah. You know, and it's slow chipping away at like your self-esteem, your self-worth, yeah. your circle. And it just, you know, as we said, it really can happen to everyone and anyone. And thank you, Juliana, for like sharing your story, because I know it's so hard, but you speak so well about it. And I think you are like an inspiration for people who are going through something like that, yeah.
And to speak up about, you know, situations that they may have got themselves in. There's nothing, you know, that's going to help always, you know. And I do think I definitely learned from the FKA Twigs interview as well, in terms of I'm not going to answer that question anymore, yeah. to anyone. If someone says, I can't believe you stayed with him and you went back to him after that, and anything that's like directed at you,
yeah,
because especially after being in like a manipulative, controlling, toxic, violent situation, when you feel so responsible, it's like we need to stop.
And the thing is about like the cycle of abuse and every abusive relationship seems to be the same. Like everyone's like, oh, I can relate to everything you said. So we need to stop answering that question, and everyone needs to take a step back and learn. This is about the same like three questions that you need to learn to answer, you know. Like people shouldn't be put on the spot all the time. Like if everyone kind of was more educated about abuse, then people wouldn't have to keep on answering that question.
Well, if people just thought,
it's the same answer every time.
Am I blaming, you know, like I've been asked that question so many times, why'd you go back to him and you went back to him after that? And it's like, do not underestimate the powers of manipulation, regardless of. And I also kind of hate that of like, oh, you don't seem to be the kind of girl to get abused. It's like, you know, that kind of idea of being like, oh, I thought you were strong. Even like, you know, disbelieving that the person that you may be. And then it kind of is like, am I that strong? So it's a real like multitude of kind of, you know, carried on toxicity.
Well,
it continues on the relationship.
It continues on the manipulation.
And the reaction can continue on the abuse and the kind of feelings of self, you know, not having good self-esteem and stuff. So I think definitely like limiting answering those questions. I think we all as women and people or men who have like suffered, you know, in relationship and abusive relationships, to just like stop answering any victim blaming questions and start directing the questions back at the abusers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
So Juliana, we'll probably leave it there, but thank you so much.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So joining us on the podcast today, we have the CEO of Women's Aid, Sarah Benson. Thank you so much for joining us, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We are so excited to talk about this topic and talk about the Two Into You campaign, which Women's Aid are running at the moment. It is a topic that a lot of you guys know is very close to mine and Lindsay's heart, and it is all about intimate relationship abuse. So Sarah, I'd let you take the lead on this and kind of introducing the campaign so we can also get up to speed on exactly what it is.
Great. Well, I mean, for those who wouldn't be familiar with Women's Aid, we've been around for nearly 50 years. And our particular focus is to provide support, but also kind of public awareness and advocacy on the issue of domestic violence. But even the words domestic violence often have particular connotations. People often think that it's where somebody's living with a husband or a spouse, whereas actually part of the Two Into You campaign, which we started back in 2011 and are delighted to be expanding now at the moment, is really designed to kind of raise awareness among younger people, kind of 18 to 25s in particular, about the fact that you don't have to be living with somebody, you don't have to be married to somebody, for you to experience what's referred to as intimate relationship abuse. And that's a term that we use more to kind of raise awareness amongst younger people, because a survey we did kind of, and some focus groups showed us that that resonates more. And we want people to know what the warning signs are of, you know, an unhealthy relationship, which could then become an abusive relationship, but also of the kind of the rights, the protections, the supports that are out there as well.
Yeah, that's so amazing. It's really interesting as well that you said, you know, touched on how the term too into you kind of resonated more with them, because I could understand that being under 25, the, you know, domestic violence has such a, like, you know, purposely and rightly so, like, negative and intense connotation. But when you're younger and you're being told that your relationships are just like, you know, young love, it can feel kind of like domestic violence is only for married couples or couples who are living together. But really the signs can start so much earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what we found, we did a survey, a national survey last year, and it found that one in five young women before they reach the age of 26 will have experienced abuse from a current or former partner. That drops considerably to one in 11 for young men in the same cohort. But just to acknowledge that, you know, obviously it can happen to anybody, and it can happen within LGBT relationships as well. But what was really stunning to us was of the one in five young women affected, 51% had first experienced the abuse under the age of 18. And so that could be their very first relationship, you know, so, you know, or certainly the early days of kind of experiencing, you know, intimate relationships. There doesn't have to be, you know, full sex happening in relationships for them to be intimate, but that's really what starts to shape people's experiences. And we know that the impact of being in a controlling, being in an abusive relationship can have really lifelong impacts on somebody's self-esteem, on the trauma that they can experience. And again, sometimes people think of, you know, well, the relationships that people have when they're younger are often shorter, but actually there's good research to show that they're still very intense and really formative in terms of how we develop our relationships going forward. So we think it's been not enough attention has been paid to that, not just the fact that it's clearly prevalent in a worrying level, but also just the impact of it. And it's also about kind of trying to open up that conversation, because we discovered, you know, the more we talk with, you know, people within that kind of age bracket, is that it's actually a very difficult issue to talk about. And it's kind of strays into the territory of talking about sexual consent and other things. But, you know, what's good behavior, what's bad behavior, what's healthy, what's unhealthy, is perhaps a conversation that haven't been had enough yet.
And that's, I think, what we want to talk about now. I love the name Too Into You, because I feel like sometimes, you know, especially if you haven't got experience in relationships, your initial kind of, you know, especially in young love, like you were saying, they abusers can use the kind of like, oh, but it's because I love you so much, as a kind of crutch to kind of be the veil of what they're actually doing is abuse. So if we were to talk about the signs, you know, of intimate relationship abuse, what would be the most common from your experience?
Well, maybe just starting with what you were just talking about there, is that level of intensity, and like kind of the first flush of love or lust, because sometimes it's, you know, you're not into the love territory, but there's, you know, a lot of strong feelings going on, is where the intensity can be seen as really attentive, really romantic, but then it starts to move into the territory of actually very controlling. So that could be, you know, where somebody is bombarding you constantly with kind of messages, kind of going, how are you doing? And then starting to get a little annoyed or even angry if you don't reply very, very quickly, you know, so you're supposed to be always on, always available to them, even when you're not together, you know, where they start to monitor, you know, who you're with, and start to interrogate that. And then when they perhaps start to get into the territory of, you know, why do we need to go out with your friends? Or, you know, isn't it always just so much nicer when it's just the two of us? And then that becomes an isolating behavior where somebody isn't then actually getting access to, and then it becomes an issue if they want to perhaps spend time away from that person. So those kind of controlling behaviors. And then you also have, you know, other forms of kind of emotional abuse, putting somebody down all the time, you know, starting to comment on, you know, how they dress, what they wear, what they think. And all of that is incremental. It can take a bit of time. But what young women in particular would say to us is that they get to a place where suddenly they realize that they almost have no control over their lives, or their every waking thought is filtered through, what's this person going to think of this? How are they going to react if I do this? And, you know, and that is that's what's different to a relationship where perhaps, you know, you have a big blow up and there's a row and then you kind of sit down and go, oh, you know, sorry, I'm sorry, I overreacted. The other person does the same. You know, that's natural and normal, where there's an imbalance where one person is slowly taking kind of control over the other person, isolating them, manipulating them, making them feel bad about themselves just for being themselves. That's where you're in the territory of somebody being kind of too into, where it's an abusive situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I on your website, so Gals, if you're listening, the two into you, TOOINTOUYOU.ie is where I'm kind of looking at some of these. You have a really good page on here that have the early signs. And I think the first two are, you know, something that can so easily be romanticized, as in, you know, we're talking about those first flushes of like lust or like, oh my God, he's so romantic. And he's like, I was watching your promo video and they're saying like, he waits for me outside of work and he's like sending gifts to my job and we only know each other like 2 weeks, you know, all these things are so heavily romanticized, but, and they can sometimes be romantic, you know, but it can be just so hard to kind of differentiate between when it becomes toxic. And the first two are like, you know, saying they hate your friends, saying you take too much time out for them, not enough for them. And, you know, that is a key element, I guess, of that kind of abuse, is like isolating you and, you know, taking you away from anyone who can be a sounding board, I guess. And then also like the constant texts. The next two I think are really interesting too, but like talking about how you dress and criticizing your clothing, and then also making you feel guilty if you don't spend all your free time with them. That's something that we've heard about a lot, Lindsay, you know, from some people, how their boyfriends or partners, you know, complaining about like, you know, where are you going wearing that, or just like little remarks. It doesn't always have to be so overt, I find.
I mean it seems as well a lot of these I can imagine the person kind of dictating these, oh, your friends are horrible or clothes are a bit much. It sounds like someone who is like insisting that you prioritize them and the relationship above all else. And if you ever try to implement, like, say, you know, time for your work or your friends, that's a problem, and that it's always related back to, you know, you're not spending it with me because you're preferring to work on your career or with your friends or your family. And it's always impacting your relationship, which a lot of the time is your home life. Even if, like you were saying, you're not living together, it can be still, it's like a comfort and that feeling of home. And like people, you know, Ireland really does value intimate relationships a lot. You know, we talk about them a lot. We, you know, they're the plus one to the wedding and all that kind of stuff. So it is kind of important in that regard. But so what would you say, you know, what's been the most common thing in terms of like, because a lot of these can seem quite small at the start. So how do you kind of notice them? Like, we hear a lot about like red flags. Is this a red flag? What would you say you would do if you start noticing these things? Is there a way that you can kind of talk to your partner and be like, that isn't right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I always want to acknowledge as well that particularly when you're talking about, you know, really young people, like, you know, still in their teens in some cases, for both it may be their first relationship. So you're not going to necessarily immediately say, jeepers, that person's really abusive. They're really, you know, in developing in a relationship, you can start to see red flags of behaviors that are unhealthy, but maybe not yet an abusive relationship, because it is about a pattern of behaviors. It's built up over time. And so if you're in a relationship with somebody and you think that they're just really leaning in a bit too hard, and, you know, and they're being a bit too persistent, or, you know, that the example I gave of, you know, where they're getting annoyed if you don't kind of text them back immediately and say, you know, how you feel, or, you know, you don't match their, you know, expressions of, you know, you know, they may say I love you first and stuff like that, and then get annoyed if you don't say it back. Like, those kinds of things, they're the opportunities to test the health of the relationship, because in any developing relationship, you know, there's always going to be rocky moments, but it's about that thing of mutuality and respect and listening to each other. And so if, you know, I behave in a way that my partner feels is disrespectful or is just, you know, a little bit getting into my space, and I sit down and I just say, look, you know, I don't think you mean anything by it, but I just want you to know this, I'm not feeling this. It's not, you know, I really do need a little bit of space. Doesn't mean I don't like you. That's just, you know, that's just the way I like to be. And they respond by saying, oh, right, sorry, I hadn't even realized. I thought that this was cool, that's fine. And they adjust their behavior to compromise with you. That's a healthy relationship. You know, it's not that we don't always have disagreements. It's how we then approach those. But if the reaction is to start blowing up or to, you know, start criticizing me, like to back just saying, well, like, what are you talking about? Like, any girl would love, you know, to have that. And what's wrong with you, you know, and you know, to make it all about themselves and then try and make the other person feel bad. That's not a reaction that you'd necessarily be saying is a good one. Again, it doesn't necessarily mean you're into an abusive relationship, but that would then be a red flag. And, you know, I think one of the things, I mean, I've worked frontline as well. I've worked on this issue for kind of, I won't even say how many years, but one of the things I have always found is some of the most interesting question. If you have a friend, for example, and you're a little bit worried and you're thinking, I don't like looking from the outside in, this guy keeps putting her down. He doesn't seem very respectful. She doesn't seem herself anymore. Is to try and get, you know, the opportunity just to ask them how they're feeling, because actually, you know, we talk about somebody being a victim of something, you know, but what we actually know is that people are constantly adapting and working incredibly hard to survive in certain situations when the person who's hurting them is, you know, really doing a number on them and really doing a number on their head as well. And so if you have the opportunity to sit down and say, how are you feeling? Like, you know, does this feel good? You know, are you happy? And try and get somebody a little bit more in touch with how they're feeling, because they may be just managing all the time and there may be good moments, you know, but at the heart of it, somebody's gut will probably be telling them that this isn't really right. You shouldn't feel scared of your partner. You shouldn't feel uncomfortable most of the time. You shouldn't feel that, you know, you're having to second guess yourself. So trying to chat with somebody in a safe, non-judgmental way and just say, how are you feeling about things at the moment? And if they're like, well, God, well, they're absolutely great. And then there's a little but, just, you know, dig into the but a little bit and just say, well, what is that? And, you know, you really shouldn't, you know, it's not right if somebody is making you feel that way about yourself. So there are signs there, but you're absolutely right, Lindsay. It can be really hard to spot them because they do get dressed up in, you know, in it being romantic, in somebody simply just not really having much experience of relationships as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And they build up slowly over time.
About the thought of like broaching a friend who you may be kind of concerned that is maybe in a bit of a, you know, being disrespected or whatever. Do you feel from your experience, because obviously a lot of abusive relationships, their aim is to isolate. So that seems to be a common one. So I feel like people are so nervous to bring up kind of the elephant in the room that, like, I'm not sure if this is healthy, or, you know, broaching that subject with a friend or a family member. And I think the fear is that it will push them to the partner more, and you're now the enemy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the first ones on the list of warning signs was, you know, that he will be like against your friends, or your partner will be like trying to isolate you. So that could also implement that if you know, the woman who's being abused or the person who's being abused goes back to the partner and says, well, even Karen thinks that what you say to me is really rude. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, I think she's this. And then you kind of, it can create a mess because the partner may not want to hang out with this friend. So what, in terms of kind of like success rates of like broaching those subjects, you're saying to kind of do it in a, you know, careful way and to kind of just let them open up themselves. Is that the better way, or is it good to kind of be like, I've also seen what I think is, you know, to be on their side of it?
Yeah, and this is so common, and this is not unique. This goes all the way up to, you know, we have people kind of ringing out where they're concerned about a friend in their 60s, you know, right? Mm-hmm. So that fear is where people know that one of the tactics can be to isolate, and you know, and you know, somebody who wants to isolate someone from their friends can do all manner of things. They can start talking about, they can lie, which is a really common thing. They'll lie, they'll say that somebody made a pass at them, they'll say that somebody said something about them, you know, they will not play fair in doing it. That's the whole, you know, that's the issue. But one of those things that we would tend to encourage people to approach a situation like that is, and it sounds counterintuitive, is neither agree nor disagree with behavior you have observed the other part, that him, her partner doing, or the abusive person doing. So come in really clean and kind of say, you know, I hope you don't mind me saying, but you don't seem quite yourself at the moment. So observe what you can observe in her, in a kind way, in a non-judgmental way, in just a way to open up the conversation, just going like, is there anything going on? You know, I'm here, you know, no judgment. You know, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm just here to just kind of hear what's going on for you, because, you know, if I'm honest, like, you know, it doesn't seem like you're quite yourself. And start there rather than going, I see the way that guy is treating you, because you're quite right. You know, there is that risk then that because leaving an abusive relationship is not an easy process. It's incredibly difficult. It's not a linear process. Sometimes somebody will leave, but they'll get drawn back in again. And that's part of what happens. So I know often when I've spoken to people where it's their friends or their sister or something like that, one of their worries is that if they come down, you know, if they say something about him and then she goes back, then the door is closed forever, because she'll feel like she can never talk to them again. And there may be a grain in that, because of course he'll say, well, you know, your sister never liked me. You know, she said all this stuff, and you know that's not true, or you know I only did that because I was, you know, really depressed over something else, and that wasn't my fault, and you know, so that will be used to kind of keep a wedge in there. So that thing of going in clean and if she does disclose, you know, well, this has been happening a bit, and, you know, just, well, how does that feel to you? You know, and just say, look, you know your own experience better, but, you know, if that was happening to me, I don't think it would feel very good. You know, how are you? So just trying to use the opportunity to open up the conversation without going, that's absolutely outrageous. You need to leave him now. It can be so easy for us to go to what we want somebody to do. And that feels, you know, passionate and it feels supportive. But actually what women who experience abusive behaviors would say is that actually that's really hard, because then it becomes more about somebody else being responsible to somebody else. And it kind of takes away from them coming to their own decision, which can take a little bit of time.
Yeah, no, totally. That's such good advice. And I remember Lindsay and I, and I'm sure you've watched it too, the documentary about R. Kelly, and they made a really good point where it can take, people who are experiencing abuse up to like 9 times, I think it was, to actually leave their abuser. And I think that's something that, you know, listeners, or, you know, if anyone is concerned about their friend, should be aware of, is that, like, if your friend leaves someone who is abusive, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Sarah, like there could be a high chance that they could go back, because there is that level almost of, like, you know, Stockholm syndrome. They break you down so early. And I think that's where the website, those warning signs, does such a good job, because there's a sliding scale of these abusive kind of traits where, like, you know, it starts off with, you know, controlling language, and it can actually go all the way down to the scale of like sexual violence, you know. So I think, would you say that there is a window in those early kind of signs where it can be, you know, either the person, as you said, is inexperienced at relationships, and maybe you can catch them early, and then maybe in your friends also, like, normalizing, I find it's what a really great thing to do in friendships is normalizing talking about fighting with your boyfriend, you know, like, how do you fight? And that can kind of give you, you know, sometimes you hear about how other people fight and you're like, oh my God, we kill each other way more, you know, that way. So I think that those kind of conversations can, you know, really help people see other people's behavior and, you know, kind of check their own as well, you know?
Yeah, because a lot of relationships are very, you know, I remember with my exes, I was just always felt so alone, and I would be in my head, I'd be screaming, I wish there was like a referee for relationships, because it's just the two of you. And sometimes you can tell that your mind is being fucked with, or that they're like, you know, but it's so frustrating when you're looking around the room being like, I wish someone else could hear this.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's always important to remember that what happens behind closed doors, none of us know what happens behind closed doors. And you can see a couple and you think, they have it all together, you know, we're shambles, like, but actually you have no idea. And in fact, that could be an absolute facade of control going on there, because what's happening is, you know, you quite rightly say, of course, sexual violence, sexual abuse, sexual coercion, and also physical threats and physical abuse can form part of an abusive relationship. But a relationship can be abusive without those and just with the threat being implicit, because at their core, the difference between what's sometimes called situational couple conflict, which is where, you know, for want of a better phrase, you get that thing of the two of the minute, like, and two people will go at it. And but an abusive relationship is where there is, it's at its core, it's about power and control, and one person, you know, exerting and achieving power and control over the other person. And that it doesn't happen by a single act of physical violence. That happens by a careful, you know, variety of, you know, sometimes quite subtle, sometimes very overt forms of kind of manipulation and abuse. And that makes it incredibly hard to leave. And the highest risk in an abusive relationship is the point where somebody is trying to decide to leave, and perhaps their abusive partner becomes aware of it, or at the point where they have left. And when I say dangerous, it can be highly dangerous, because what has happened there is that all of the effort that the abusive partner has put into, and they put a lot of effort into it, to gaining control, is being lost. And so they will up the ante. And that can happen in a few different ways. It can be, you know, suddenly they'll produce an engagement ring. That might be the route they take. Or they will resort to more extreme forms of abuse and violence. But people do get drawn back in, because it takes enormous energy to try and leave something like that, something so dangerous. And if you don't feel you have a support structure around, or you feel you're being judged for your actions, sometimes an abusive partner will employ somebody's friends to try and get them back. You know, oh, he's got it. He knows he messed up, you know. And so listening to your friend or your colleague or your sibling, whoever it is that's suffering, that is, and always remembering that the manipulation can extend beyond the individual to their entire peer group, to their entire family in some cases, and just staying with your friend, you know, not telling them what to do, but kind of sitting in it with them. And something you said there is, like, you know, letting them know that they're not alone, because you'd be surprised how many people say, I think I was the only person in the world this was happening to. And people judge themselves for it happening as well. Say, how did I get myself into this? You know, I always considered myself a strong woman. I always considered myself smart. And at the same time, they're not maybe realizing that somebody has been chipping away, telling them that they're not strong and they're not smart, and that everything that's happening is their fault, and that becomes internalized. So if we're helping somebody, if we're supporting somebody, recognizing that that's really, really common, and countering it by, you know, messages that, you know, it's not your fault. And, you know, I'll support you with whatever you want to do. And I know it's really difficult, but know that you're not alone on this. And there's, like, you know, there's websites about this. There's like 1 in 5 women, you know, 1 in 11 guys that this is happening to. So, but the key thing is, it's not your fault, and not falling into the trap of taking, you know, taking the side of the other person when you know that those kind of controlling and manipulative behaviors can be going on.
I think that's,
I feel like, you know, Jenny spoke a while ago about, like, normalizing talking about arguments or disagreements. You know, myself, Jenny, and my sisters would always do that and make sure that we're there for each other if there is a big blow up, and we can go to each other and, like, just, you know, say everything. And then it's like the conclusion is none of, you know, the person's business who isn't in the relationship. You know, the way, because sometimes, like, you go to your friends and you're like, he's that, I am this, and he's that, and I can't stand him. And then you go home, you make it up, you conclude it. Like you said, you never know what goes on behind closed doors. And, you know, for me, I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to be like, well, just make sure, girl, like, to don't forget what you told me on the couch that time. It's like, actually just leave it, so that they know that they can come back to the sofa and be like, oh, because it's not going to carry on the judgment. But I do feel I've been in situations before with friends, say other parents who, you know, say they've had a baby and the baby's 8 months and they're going out, and I'm noticing things that, like, you know, I think I'm hypersensitive to those kind of things as well, because I was in a controlling relationship. So I can kind of spot the signs that I maybe missed, and I can be a bit like, you know, OTT with that. But I think it's important, well, what I do is, you know, small little things. Like, say if my friend is like, oh, it's his first time at home with the baby and he's really worried because I've been, you know, and so I won't be out late because, like, I don't want it, that kind of thing. I'll kind of say, oh, sure, look, it's his baby too. You know, kind of trying to say things without it being like overly judgmental or overly like hand on her shoulder, like, I'm worried about you, hon, but kind of like pointing out and like kind of talking about the elephant in the room, like, oh, you know, you've been in with the baby for the past 8 months. Maybe it's okay. You know, that kind of thing. Because I think it's good to kind of hold a mirror up to each other. And that's what I was saying, how we deal with like talking about arguments. It kind of is like a great way to kind of look inward at your own relationship and be like, is that normal that he doesn't talk to me for 2 days after an argument when my sister can get over her argument with her fella in an hour and they're hugging again?
Yeah, that's absolutely key. And actually, that's one of the main reasons why isolation is so effective, is because people no longer can see what's normal. They don't see healthy family relationships. They don't see their, you know, their friends. So, and they're not exposed to that comparison. And that's actually very deliberate on the part of somebody who's abusive, is to actually, you know, then what is happening becomes normal, because that's all there is. And being able to kind of state the facts without, you know, just saying, well, look, you know, plenty of fathers out there who've managed not to, like, you know, drop their babies. Like, you know, there's two parents in it, you know, those kinds of just simple factual things that aren't, like, you know, tied up with, you know, other value judgments. They're just simply saying, oh yeah, but look, sure, you know, there's plenty of dads managed just fine. And look, sure, isn't this a great opportunity, you know? You know, yeah. you've been with the baby so intensely all the time for 8 months, you know, and isn't this a great chance now for him to actually, you know, get a bit of one-on-one time, you know, and surely that's the way to look at it, you know. And so make it a positive. And then if it happens, you know, that he starts ringing, I mean, I know, you know, where that does happen is somebody is really, really looking forward to going out. It becomes a big thing. And within an hour, suddenly they're starting to get messages and the baby's crying. And it comes so that it's just not worth it to stay out, because the enjoyment is totally gone. And that's, you know, and so those kinds of things absolutely happen, and they are really kind of controlling. They are designed to, they're particularly cruel actually, because they let somebody go to the point of getting all dressed up and, you know, and then just pulling the rug. And say, well, your baby needs you, which is also then becomes a blaming thing, as a, you're a bad mother if you don't come home now, even though this is the first time you've been out in like months.
Something that you said there really resonated with me, where you were talking about like sometimes abusers can, you know, almost get like employ people to be on their side, like almost like spokesperson for them. And I think it can be something that I would run through when I was younger, was being in a relationship with someone who was abusive, and we shared a huge group of friends. And, you know, when you have everyone else being like, oh, they're so great, blah, 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 blah. Like, you can feel like, you know, when you don't, because what happened to me was like, I was almost isolated to where his friends were only my friends. Now I had some other friends on the outside, but it was kind of like put towards where like, that was my main friend group. So I'd say, you know, would you have any, maybe any tips for someone who's in that kind of situation where like they've, you know, they might not have no friends, but all of their friends have become their abuser's friends, and they're finding it hard to kind of get like, you know, to talk to someone who sees it from their perspective?
Yeah, it's a really difficult situation when you have a shared peer group, or as you say, where through the relationship, their peer group, where they have maybe the more established relationships, becomes, you know, your main source of kind of social contact. It's very hard to give a single kind of steer on that, because I think what you'd be doing is, in those situations, is saying, is there anyone in this peer group who I actually think, you know, I could potentially be closer to than he is, who I would trust, you know? Because, you know, a group is not, it can feel like a herd, but they are all individual people. And so in that group, you know, is there somebody there who actually, you know, I have a feeling maybe would know that this person isn't 100%, you know, the most awesome person in the world, you know, or maybe saw the way that they behaved to me when we were together, and perhaps would recognize that. And if there is, there may still be the opportunity to develop friendships. I think the other thing then is around your consideration of kind of ongoing mental well-being and safety, is if does staying with this peer group mean that you are always going to continue to be exposed to this person, and how do they behave when you're in that peer group? Is the abuse still going on? Because, you know, are they making snippy comments? Are they putting you down whenever they can? In that case, the abusive relationship is continuing, even if you're not together anymore. And that's a really important thing to pay attention to. And then the other thing is, and it can feel incredibly difficult, is who were the people I felt safest and happiest with before this relationship? Have some of them drifted out of my life? And could I just maybe reach out and drop them a message, drop them a snap, you know, get in touch? And people can feel like, I can't do that. It's too big of a hill to climb. But it's remarkable how generous our friends can be when it's, and it's just, you know, just reaching out saying, gosh, you know I haven't seen you in ages. I've missed you. You know, could we meet for a coffee? And try and, you know, get your people back, you know. So I can't say any one or other of those is the right way to go, but I think they're good things to think about. But the key thing is around where am I going to feel safe? Where am I going to feel happy? And not to feel like I have no choices but to continue to expose myself to somebody who isn't good to have in my life.
Yeah, I know that's a great tip. I think, you know, we always think, especially if, you know, everyone's been in a situation, I think, especially when they're younger, where they might get a boyfriend and they might like be like, oh my God, I haven't seen my friends in ages, you know, or vice versa, you know, that can happen on a healthy level too. But I think that, you know, if you are going through something, maybe thinking as well of like, who was that one friend who was kind of always like on my side about it? Or, you know, was there a friend that like, yeah, my abuser, like, you know, specifically told me not to hang out with because he didn't like her or because she was calling out certain behaviors? And I think that that's something that people in those situations really need to be reminded of, is that like a lot of the time those, you know, those people who are on your side probably still are and are wanting you to reach out to them, you know. Something else that you talked about, which I think is interesting and something that I guess could be going on more so now, would be, you know, the involvement of the internet. And you touched on earlier about like how sometimes after you leave a relationship, it can become even more dangerous because the person knows, the abuser knows that you actually have kind of copped on to their bad behavior. They're losing control of you. And I think now the internet has probably enabled this even more so with like the likes of online harassment. I see here, I have the press release and says of women who have suffered abuse, 1 in 2 experience online abuse as well. So I think it's this whole idea of, you know, it's like bullying as well. Bullying isn't just in school now. It can come home to you. And it's the same with abuse.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, one of the things that we've been highlighting as a part of the Two Into You campaign is the fact that actually we have new legislation, because up until this point, certain forms of abuse that took place using digital technology or online, there wasn't really adequate legislation to make them offences. And now we have the Harassment and Harmful Communications Act, which has literally just over a week ago taken effect. And that makes it much more clear that kind of what you'd refer to as cyberbullying, cyber stalking, but also critically, which has never been properly enshrined in law, image-based sexual abuse, which has kind of tended to be referred to sometimes as revenge porn. But it's like, that's a really misleading term, because it suggests that somebody has done something to warrant some kind of vengeful, you know, attack on them. And it's not porn. It's about taking intimate images, faking up images, taking images and videos that may have been shared at the time consensually, or taking them without somebody's permission. We've come across that as well, and then sharing them on the internet. So all of those forms of harassment, bullying behavior are now more clearly criminal offenses. And that includes whether somebody has, you know, is deliberately doing it to hurt or harm somebody else, or if they're completely reckless to the fact that, you know, they could be sharing it with the lads because they think it's cool. They could be selling it to a porn site, you know, whatever it might be. It doesn't matter the intention. It's the fact that it's recognized as being a devastating way of hurting somebody else. So that's now against the law. And one of the things we wanted to make is also people who might be considering doing that to somebody else, make them aware that this is very clearly a crime now. But yeah, that kind of always on thing, that harassment, bullying, it's not that it's been adopted as a replacement to kind of in-person harassment or bullying. It's unfortunately, it's an additional tool that can be used. And we've had women who've had everything from spyware downloaded onto their phones. So literally every message they share, they've had tracking, you know, devices turned on, like on their phones. And a lot of these things are actually very benign, because you turn on your location, you drop a pin, you do all these things, the technology is there. But if somebody gets into your phone and they then, you know, so it can be used as a stalking device. It also can be used on people's social media and can be hacked. One of the common tactics in an intimate relationship is that somebody gets you to share your passwords or happens to be hanging over your shoulder when you're logging into something, and then they have your password so they can either hack. So we have people's accounts hacked where just outrageous lies have been put up about them, where they've done really vindictive things like contact people who they know are close to that person and say horrible stuff. So that person thinks that they, you know, that they're, you know, they're hurting them to try and split them up with people. So really nasty behavior. And then also just constant messaging and things like that, or looking at if you upload where you are and stuff like that, using that, then maybe turning up, being able to do it to turn up in person. And things like that. So unfortunately it can be a tool. It's brilliant, it keeps us all connected, helps us share, but if anyone is concerned, particularly at the point where they're breaking up with somebody, we would be saying there's actually a digital safety guide on the Two Into You website around, you know, changing your passwords, if something has happened, you know, the kind of steps to take, you know, obviously contact the Gardaí, but also contact certain social media platforms, things like that, because And particularly with lockdown at the moment, you know, dating isn't really happening so much in person. And so we know, and we've spoken to colleagues in the likes of the USI Welfare and others, is that there is appears to be an increased pressure to kind of, you know, have kind of online sex and stuff like that, which may have a video. You may not be aware that somebody's recording you, or you may, choose to do it consensually, but then unfortunately you lose control of that. And that one of the consequences then is that you have, you know, particularly of women, like hideous victim blaming, you know, just for doing something that should have been a consensual thing. And the focus on the person who completely breached that trust gets a bit lost. So that's something we want to kind of reposition and say, you know, that the trust has been broken. Or that's the person who should be held to account in those instances.
I've also noticed around the whole like internet social media realm within controlling relationships, that sometimes a partner could be quite controlling over what you want to put up on social media, what you want to talk about, and those kind of you know, that especially with younger people, I've seen that, like, oh, you're putting up like revealing pictures, or, you know, and there's that weird kind of like people, I think especially women with social media and Instagram and TikTok or whatever, like we want to kind of keep up with the trends. And if like, you know, there's girls in bikini photos or body positivity stuff, or just like, you know, nights out where you're looking glam and you want to put that up. And a lot of like, I mean, even I know myself, I do that kind of because I'm, you know, confident in myself that day and I'm like liking how I look and I want to share that. And whatever kind of, like, you know, that's rooted in, I have noticed that can definitely be used as a tool for control, that a partner could be like, oh, why are you putting that up? That should be for me. And that kind of idea of ownership over someone, or, you know, even sexualizing the idea of a woman putting up a photo of herself looking well or in a bikini to kind of think, oh, who's that for? You're trying to entice these men. And again, it takes the idea of, you know, that it's the woman's fault.
Yeah,
she's enticing them. You're looking for DMs. There's
a really good word there, which is ownership. And I always find it staggering that consistently the level of hypocrisy in these situations is that very often the relationship may have started by then complimenting what they were seeing up on, you know, on Insta or whatever it is, and just and even sometimes contacting somebody that way, you know, or because of a particular dating profile pic, which was exactly the thing that they then start to criticize and then start to dig into. And that is because it's like, well, that was all fine, but now I'm here and I effectively, you know, this is mine. What you've got is mine, and you need not to be showing that to anybody anymore. And that's really where that comes in from. If somebody's not happy, you know, that's and even in the conversation, just, oh, I admire your confidence, and it's great to see, you know, somebody putting themselves out there like that. And then suddenly the whole thing gets flipped because it's about entitlement and ownership. And if somebody's behaving that way, you know, that's not respectful. That's not accepting that you are your own person and that you can make your own choices about how you want to, you know, how you want to be in the world, how you want to communicate yourself, your style, whatever it might be. But to me, that always invariably comes back to a loop of utter hypocrisy where at some point they will have actually complimented those photos.
Another thing on the hypocrisy that you kind of reminded me of what you spoke about earlier is this whole like getting each other's passwords, because I think a lot of the time that can be presented as like, oh well, if we trust each other we can both have each other's passwords, or like I can have, like, if you trust me you'll let me read your WhatsApp or you'll let me, you know, view your DMs and all this kind of stuff, and it can be weaponized against you, and then you can be like, oh well, I don't want him to think that I don't trust him, or that like I'm sneaking around. That can be that conversation too, like, well, what do you not want me to see? It's, and you have to always remember, I guess, that, like, you know, there's a difference between trust and personal boundaries.
Well, I always take the view with those is that if you have a diary, you know, and somebody says, I really want to read your diary, I think we should have enough trust. You know, it's like, well, you know, that to me is like, how insecure are you? And also, am I entitled to have nothing? Is there nothing? You know, in the same way that if I walk into a room and I have a conversation with somebody, I don't come out and then relay the entire conversation, in the same way that I'm not going to share the entire thread of, you know, these text messages or, you know. So if you think before we had these ways of communicating, would it have been normal for somebody to say, okay, so you had lunch with Jane. I need you to tell me entirely what the exchange was, because, you know, of course, we must do that in order to have trust with each other. Whereas actually the opposite is the case. The only question you should be asking was, did you have a nice lunch with Jane? Anything you'd like to share? And that's it. So digging into somebody's, you know, social media conversations, things like that, you know, should be treated in the same vein. It's like, oh, who are you chatting to? It's quite a normal thing to ask. And just say, oh yeah, how are they? You know, or anything interesting. But if it starts going further than that, it's like, really none of your business. Like, that's my friend. I had a private conversation. And also it could be their private stuff and I'm maintaining their confidentiality. There's so many reasons that that's not okay.
And you're entitled to your own privacy, even whilst being in a relationship. I think as well, in terms of, I read something years ago that, like, if you're kind of tempted to go through your partner's Facebook or Instagram, or just their phone was left and you just, that is an indulgence 100%. But if you do, like, I've read that, like, if you do indulge in that, you will not stop looking until you find something that you don't like, that you can then present to your partner and be like, who the hell is Sheila or whatever. And the idea of trust is like, sometimes you might see your partner's phone on the couch and something could ping up that you're like, oh, I don't know the name of that person. But the trust should be that I trust, you know, I don't need to know that, you know, I don't need to, like, cause you can misconstrue, like, say if anyone went through my phone, they'd be like, what the hell? Like, our phones are like these insane diaries of what we see, what we like write down, like what we're sent. It's like a multitude of like madness. And but yeah, what do you think about the whole, like, do you think you should, I think you should never go through someone's phone or anything like that. And especially, you know, and I've had it done to me before and I've done it before, but I've definitely learned that it's toxic and something that's just not good. And especially because you will not stop. Do you think that's true, that like they will not stop until they find something that they can use?
I think, I'm not trying to fudge your question, but I think with anything where you do something or are thinking of doing something and you have a sense that it's crossing a line, it might be a little line or it might feel like a big line. When you've crossed that with anything, any behavior, any boundary that you step over, it becomes easier and easier and easier to continue doing it, because it's kind of like once you've broken that kind of moral pain barrier or whatever was in your head that had you hesitating. So I think that absolutely can be the case. I think the question that very few of us ask ourselves when we're thinking into, like, you know, do I look at the phone? Do I open the diary? You know, do I open that email? Is why would I be wanting to do that? And like, what is it that's going on in my head or in my gut that is suggesting to me that that's a good idea? And I think that's the question we all need to start with before doing it. Because, you know, in certain scenarios, there may be, you know, loads of other signs going on out there where, you know, you'd weigh it up and go like, I'm really pretty sure this person is cheating on me, and I have a feeling that I'll find that out really quickly. Or is it like, I'm feeling a little bit insecure, and I can track it back to, you know, they complimented my friend the other day and I thought that that was a bit, and because really whatever it is, the only reason we want to do it is actually about ourselves. It's not about the other person, because you can be going out with somebody and you can be like, I don't really care if they're seeing other people. Like, I quite like an open relationship. So all we can do is kind of sit back with ourselves and go, what's going on with me that I'm even thinking about this? And to try and track it back. And then make your decision. And I'm not going to judge anyone for their decisions, because there's all the different circumstances. But once you've done that, once you cross a particular line, yeah, no doubt, then it becomes something that's easier to do. And it can definitely lead into difficult situations. I think it would be better if there's a trust issue, rather than go the line of trying to validate something you're not even sure about, to actually kind of go, okay, well, what is it that's causing me to feel mistrustful at the moment, and actually have the conversation with your partner, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, almost like, if that. Sorry, Liz. Almost like if you're going to weaponize it against them, you know, that way it's like, what am I going to do with if I find out this magic information that I want or I feel I need? Like, what's the outcome? Like, is it evidence that I need to get out of a relationship? Am I hearing rumors that, like, I don't know, cheating? And if you do get this one piece of information, like, am I going to leave them, or am I just going to weaponize it against them? And is it going to be this ongoing fight and all that kind of stuff?
And you also then have to reveal that you've done something which objectively could be seen as being intrusive, for all the reasons that we were just discussing, that, you know, people are entitled to their private life as well. So it is better to, as you say, well, what would I do with that information if I have a mistrust, you know? And even if, you know, it turns out that it's not true, you know, how am I feeling about this relationship? You know, would I care? You know, would I be devastated? In which case, maybe I want to share that I'm feeling really serious about this relationship and see if they feel the same way. Or maybe I don't care, in which case I might make a decision that really I might as well cut my losses here, because I don't see this going anywhere. So it really comes down to how you feel about the situation. But I always would, open communication is better. Yeah.
What I'm gathering, we had a question last month, not the Q&A that came out today. Last month, we had a question from a girl who was in a long-term relationship, and she had noticed changes in her partner who she was living with. And she confronted him and he was like not giving anything away. Everything was fine, apparently. So I think she felt like her only way to get the answer was by going through his phone. And she did. And she found evidence that he had gone and seen a sex worker. Mm-hmm. And she had the evidence there. So I think sometimes cases like that, possibly where you feel like you're maybe being gaslit, where you kind of, there's all, you know, these signs, like you were saying, and that something like that could be evidence as a, you know, a get out of jail card.
Yeah, I mean, look, unfortunately, human nature dictates. I mean, Women's Aid wouldn't exist if, unfortunately, there weren't people who didn't, you know, treat other people badly, and that people betray trust and all of those kinds of things. And it's very difficult to give one clear line of thought on that. I mean, one of the things I would say is, if somebody is having kind of those worries, and sometimes people don't want to bring them to their friends, they feel too personal, or they're not sure and they don't want then that to kind of come back, is to think about services like, say, the Women's Aid Helpline. You know, these 24/7 totally confidential spaces, they are not just for when there's a crisis. They are really very often where somebody's just like, I just have bad feeling at the moment, or I'm feeling bad and I don't really know why, because I don't think I've done anything, but there's these things going on. And to use those services as the resource they ought to be, which is often just as a completely confidential sounding board. And sometimes people are all up in their head and they just need a chance to just speak it out. And very often that can be easier to do with somebody who you've never met before, because they're a completely neutral kind of blank canvas. They don't know your partner, they don't know your friends, they don't have any, they have no skin in the game, like, you know, so all they are there is to help you talk things out. And it's a remarkably underrated thing, just having somebody just listen, you know, who isn't, you know, going to tell you, you know, what to do, but will do things like you were talking about earlier, Lindsay, about validate. I'm just saying, well, you know, what you described there, you know, that wouldn't necessarily be considered, you know, you know, a healthy way to respond to the scenario you've given me. And, you know, that could be kind of construed as, you know, an overreaction. How did you feel about it? You know, those kinds of things. So, you know, encouraging people to, they don't always have to talk to you. And, you know, if they are spinning a bit, you know, taking the time to kind of reach out, ring a free service, you know, use the instant messaging services that we and others might provide.
I notice you have that instant messaging service. I think that's great too, because I think in the age of like texting and, you know, online chat rooms, like some people, especially younger people, might not be as versed as picking up the phone. And it's also something that if, you know, if you do live with your partner, you know, we're in lockdown, you're going to be in, you know, you might not always be able to get the chance to sneak out and make that phone call. And, you know, I think it's so helpful that on your website you do have that instant chat, and I think that's so worthwhile. So just to end off, I guess, just to highlight some of the services that Women's Aid do provide, you have your free phone number, which is 1800 341 900. It's twointoyou.ie, and as you said, it's a 24-hour national free phone line. So and I'm presuming as well that this can be used as well as people who are maybe undergoing like a situation, but you know, if I had a friend who I noticed, would I be able to also call up and like ask for advice?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, both the Two Into You website and the regular, the womensaid.ie website actually has loads of information on it. You know, that's not just for those who might be directly impacted by intimate relationship abuse, but it's also for people who are saying, you know, what are the signs? I am worried about somebody else. What is the information that's out there? You know, how can I be of help? And we would definitely get men and women contacting the helpline saying, there's somebody I care about who I'm worried about, but I'm not sure what to do. What do you think? And they'll get everything from information on kind of protective orders to just give them a little bit of confidence on how to open up the conversation. So absolutely, we're there for, you know, friends, allies of those who might be suffering. And likewise, I just want to acknowledge, like, we have the National Free Phone Helpline. We have some Dublin-based face-to-face services and drop-in services in the court in Dublin. But we also act as a signpost to all of the other services around the country. Sometimes somebody wants to talk on the phone or instant message. But sometimes they want a face-to-face support, and we can directly connect people if it's, you know, within the appropriate hours to another domestic violence service. And also, if somebody perhaps isn't so comfortable speaking through English, we also have a direct interpreting service in over 170 languages. We can get an interpreter on the line just to make it more accessible for those who might be migrants, might not have, you know, English as their first language.
Amazing. Well, Sarah, I think we'll leave it there. I know you're a very busy woman, but thank you so much for coming on and, you know, giving us great tangible advice. That is what we're about here. And, you know, if anyone again is affected by anything we spoke about today, I'd encourage you to go onto the Into You website. We'll link it below, and we'll leave the free phone hotline number as well. So Sarah, thank you so much.
Thanks, Maeen, for having me on. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sarah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.